The Inheritance. One time when she was 10 or thereabouts, a traveling fireworks vendor came to Yokoya. The village elders, in an unusual fit of decadence, paid him to put on a show celebrating the end of the first harvest. Families packed the square, gazing up at the booming, crackling explosions racing across the night sky. Kyoshi did not see the display. She lay on the floor of someone's tool shed, twisted by fever. The morning after, the heat in her skull forced her awake at dawn. She staggered around the outskirts of town, seeking cool air, and found the field where the vendor set his explosives the night before. The ground was scorched and pitted, utterly ravaged by a fiend born of no natural element. It was covered in a layer of ash and upturned rocks. Water creeping in slow, black rivulets. The wind smelling like rotten eggs and urine. She remembered now, being suddenly terrified that she'd catch blame for the destruction. She'd run away, but not before scuffing her footprints off the path she'd taken. When Kiyoshi regained her vision, she thought for a moment she'd been thrown back in time to that unreal, violated landscape. The trees were gone behind her, snapped at their trunks and torn by their roots to expose damp clumps of soil. Before her, it was as if some great hand had tried to sweep away the mountainside in a convulsion of fear and shame. Deep rips crisscrossed the stone like claws. The hilltops had been pushed over, the traces of landslides pouring down from their crests. Kiyoshi had the vague notion that she was too high up, and she couldn't see Kelsung anywhere. She'd wiped away his existence. There was an animal howl floating on the wind, the scream of rosin on warped strings. It came from her. Kyoshi dropped to the ground and lay there, her face wet with tears. She pressed her forehead to the earth, and her useless cries echoed back in her face. Her fingers closed around the dust, sifting for what she'd lost. It was her fault. It was all her fault. She'd pushed Kelsung away instead of listening to him, allowed cowardice to rule her thoughts and actions. And now, the source of light in her life was gone. She had nothing left. Not even the air in her lungs. The heaving sobs coursing through her body wouldn't allow her to breathe. She felt like she was going to drown above water, a fate she would have accepted gladly. A just punishment for an unwanted girl who'd squandered her second chance. Kelsung, a miraculous, loving father conjured from thin air. And she'd cursed him with death and ruin. There was a tremor in the distance. The rubble around a certain spot was sinking, parting. Someone had escaped the havoc she'd wreaked in the Avatar state by burrowing deep down in the earth. Now, he was tunneling back to the surface, ready to claim his property. Kiyoshi scrambled to her feet in a blind, wild panic. She tried to run in the direction they'd come, stumbling past landmarks she prayed she remembered correctly. The baked ruins of the mining villages were so similar in their crumbling appearance that for a second she thought she was caught in a loop. But then, right as her legs were about to give out, she found Peng Peng waiting where they'd left her. The bison took a whiff of Kiyoshi and bellowed mournfully, rearing on her back four legs before crashing down hard enough to shake the dirt. Kyoshi understood. Maybe Peng Peng had felt her spiritual connection with Kelsung dissipate, or maybe Kyoshi simply smelled of his blood.
"He's gone," she cried. "He's gone, and he's not coming back. We have to leave, now."
Peng Peng stopped thrashing, though she looked no less upset.
She allowed Kyoshi to climb on her back, using fistfuls of fur as a ladder, and soared into the air in the direction of home without being told.
Yokoya,
Kyoshi corrected herself.
Not home. Never again home. Yokoya.
She stayed back in the passenger's saddle. She was unwilling to straddle Peng Peng's withers in Kelsang's place, and the bison didn't need guidance for the return journey. From high up in the sky, she could see dark, rain-filled clouds approaching over the ocean in the opposite direction. If they flew fast enough, they could reach Yokoya before meeting the storm.
Hurry, please,
she shouted, hoping Peng Peng could understand her desperation. They'd managed to strand Jianju in the mountains, but the man's presence felt so close behind. As if all he needed to do was reach his arm out for her to feel his hand clamping down on her shoulder. That same year she'd caught sick and suffered through the fireworks, Kelsang had returned to the village. He looked askance at the farmer who swore that Kyoshi had been well taken care of with the money he'd left behind. The weight she'd lost and her pallid skin told a different story. Afterward, Kelsang promised Kyoshi that he'd never leave her for so long again. But Kyoshi had long forgotten about any nights she'd spent ill without medicine. She'd been more concerned with the new kite-flying craze that had taken hold of the village children. For weeks, brightly colored paper diamonds and dragons and gull wings had hypnotized her from the sky, dancing on the wind. Not surprisingly, she hadn't the supplies or guidance to make one of her own. Kelsang noticed her staring longingly at the kites dotting the sky while they shared a meal outside. He whispered an idea in her ear. Together, they scavenged and spliced enough rope for him to tie one end around his waist. That afternoon, he took off soaring on his glider, while Kyoshi held the other end from below. They laughed so loud, they could hear each other across the great heights. For her, he was the biggest, fastest, best kite in the whole world. She'd misjudged the weather. The first drops of rain pattered on her cheek, waking her from her slumber of exhaustion. She and Peng Peng still had some ways to go when it quickly became a torrent that blotted out the sun. They narrowly managed to get down to Yokoya in time to avoid the lightning spreading its fingers across the sky. They arrived at the mansion. Kyoshi jumped off Peng Peng near the stables and landed ankle deep in mud. She waded through the blinding rain to the house. The staff and the guests had been driven inside to their quarters. The ride had given her time to think, and she'd concluded that every decision from here on out was easy. An inevitability she would follow into the darkness. The only person who could have made her falter was waiting inside the servants' entrance for her, under the archway of the wall. Rangi looked like she had confined herself to this area the entire day. She'd worn out a groove in the floor with her pacing back and forth.
Kyoshi, where were you?
Rangi said, a scowl on her face from having been left in the dark for so long.
What happened? Where are the others?
Kyoshi told her everything. About the powerful and terrible spirit that had identified Kyoshi as the Avatar. About the way Jianju had offered Yun up as a sacrifice and murdered Kelsang when he came to rescue them. She even included how she'd entered the Avatar state. Rangi stumbled backward until she knocked her head against a support beam.
What?
She whispered.
That's not... What?
That's what happened, Kyoshi said.
She dripped rainwater on the floor, each plip another precious second lost.
I have to go. I can't stay here.
Rangi started pacing again, running her fingers through the ends of her hair, which had fallen loose.
There's got to be a misunderstanding, an explanation, You said there was a spirit? It must have played tricks on your mind. That's been known to happen. Or maybe you simply got confused. Master Jianju can't have... He wouldn't.
She watched Rongi attempt to will a different reality into existence. It was the same trap Kiyoshi had fallen into the day Kelsang told her she might be the Avatar.
We've got to get to the bottom of this, Rongi said. When Jianju gets home, we'll make him explain himself. We'll find out what really happened to Yun and Master Kelsang. Rongi, they're dead! I have to go!
Throughout the journey back, Kiyoshi had been thinking only about the shards of her life buried on that mountain. She'd forgotten there was still one more piece. And Rongi's stunned silence let her know she'd lost that too. Kiyoshi pushed past her without saying goodbye and headed to her room. It was easy to fill a sack with her clothes. She barely had any. She was going to leave everything on her shelf behind, but the thought of Kelsang made her grab the clay turtle and throw that in. The item that gave her pause was the beautiful green battle outfit that she'd worn on the iceberg and was now hanging on her wall. For some reason, Jianju had let her keep it in her room. The thought of taking, of using a gift from him made her insides clench. But she would need armor like that where she was going. A protective shell. She took it down, hastily rolled it up, and stuffed it in the sack. The leather journal went on top. She was truly grateful she'd never given in to her urge to destroy the book. In the past, it may have been incriminating evidence, but now it was a war plan. Tucking the bundle under one arm, she stooped down, grabbed the handle of her trunk with the other, and dragged it out into the hallway. The corners of the trunk screeched as they gouged out a trail in the polished wooden floors. She supposed the reason that no one stopped her was that they were scared. She saw the hems of robes disappearing around corners, frightened whispers behind closed doors as she passed. The guardsmen, she remembered, had been decimated on the iceberg. And there had always been an undercurrent of suspicion in the way the other servants looked at her. Now her aberrant behavior must have pushed it over the edge into fear. She looked like a swamp ghost, dripping with the water she'd drowned in. She could only imagine what terrors her face held. Each fork in the hallway brought another flash of raw, saw-bladed pain to her heart, as if she were one of the target dummies in the courtyard, collecting jagged arrows with her body. The routes she'd taken in her daily life unfolded down the corridors of the mansion, leading inevitably, over and over again, to the dead. The way to Yun's room, the one area he never let her clean, flustering over his privacy. The path to the little nook where Kelsang would meditate when the weather was too harsh. The grass where the three of them had spat watermelon seeds, only to run away when Auntie Mui yelled at them for making a mess. She would never tread these lines again. She would never arrive to see Yun and Kelsang's smiling faces at the end of her steps. By design, Kiyoshi took the long way past the wood chopping station. The splitting maul was there, the wedge buried in the block. Kiyoshi placed her bag between her teeth and picked up the maul with her free hand. The entire block came with it, stuck to the blade, so she smashed the whole agglomeration against the wall until the heavy tool was freed from the wood. She kept walking. Outside, the rain had doubled. The interval between lightning and thunder was non-existent. She dropped her bag and flung the heavy wooden trunk in front of her. It slid in the mud before coming to a stop. The chest had been a focal point for her anger in the past, collecting the flows of her hatred like the water barrels positioned under the gutters of the house. It had been left behind in Yokoya, like her, by the people who'd relegated her to the life of a starving, desperate, unloved creature for so many years, before Kelsang came into her life. Her parents would have to take a lower place on the shelf for now. She had someone new to focus on. Another lightning flash illuminated which side the iron lock was on. Raising the maul high above her head with both hands, she swung it down, aiming for the weakest point. The wedge of the maul bounced off the metal. The trunk sank deeper into the mud. She struck it again, and again, and again. The thunder and rain drowned out her senses, leaving her with nothing but the painful vibrations rebounding up the haft of the maul into her hands. She struck again and felt a crunch. Rather than the lock breaking, the trunk had splintered where the metal was fastened to the wood. But it was open. Kiyoshi tossed the maul aside and raised the creaking lid. Inside were two ornate metal war fans, the color of gold alloyed with bronze. The weapons were packed in a softer wood frame that held them open while protecting them from rough treatment like the sort she'd just doled out. A headdress made out of the same material rested in between them. It complemented the fans by mounting smaller versions of them on a band, forming a semicircular crest at the forehead. Lastly, there was a plain leather pouch with a case that she knew contained makeup. A lot of makeup. She snatched each item from its moorings. The headdress and fans were much sturdier than they appeared. They were meant to be worn and wielded in combat, after all. They and the pouch went inside her bag. The trunk served no further purpose and would be left in the mud. With that, Kiyoshi was finished. She was taken aback at how completely and utterly finished she was. How little she had put on display, how much she'd lost. Like the black night sky around the burst of a firework. She'd held on too hard to a treasure that might have been shaped like a home and a family, only to discover that her touch had dissolved it entirely. She wiped her eyes with her forearm and ran around the edge of the mansion, slipping and falling in the rain at least twice, and reached the stables. There was a shock waiting for her. Rongi was busy securing bedrolls, tents, and other bales of supplies to Peng Peng's saddle. She looked up at Kiyoshi from under the hood of her rain cloak. "Let me guess," she shouted over the downpour, pointing at several waterproof baskets and sacks of grain. "You didn't pack any food, did you?" She reached down, grasped Kiyoshi's hand, and pulled her onto Peng Peng's back. Then she hopped into the driver's seat and took up the reins. "We'll have to fly low and head southwest, out of the storm." Kiyoshi's throat was a solid lump. "Why are you doing this?" "I have no idea what's going on right now," Rongi said over her shoulder. She flicked rain off her brow. Her face underneath looked like she was heading into combat. "But I'm not going to let you ride off on your own and die in this storm. You won't last an hour without help." Kiyoshi nodded, stricken dumb with gratitude to Rongi. For Rongi. She pleaded with the spirits that it wasn't a final cruel trick, the form of her friend sitting before her. She maintained a safe distance so as not to dispel the precious vision. The firebender snapped Peng Peng's reins with authority.
"Up, girl!"
Rongi shouted.
"Yip, yip!"